Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on genetic roulette when we come back. You know, during the 1970s, there was an obscure black college professor down at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama. While working on a grant, he developed a unique marketing plan for agricultural products. The plan was aimed at poor, rural, black landowners in the South who own small acreages. The goal was to keep these landowners on the land by producing produce for sale to the public at retail and to generate an income that would support a family. It was called the Whatley Program, and it was so successful that it became known as the Whatley Program, how to make $100,000 on 25 acres a year, or 25 acres or less. And the guy's name was Professor Booker T. Whatley. Now there are more than 4,000 of these small family enterprises scattered all over the United States. Now the law school has taken the Whatley Program and added the 15 agricultural laws of the Bible and the 17 financial laws from Scripture, so that you can practice all of these laws in the United States, your state, and the Scripture, and make a good living for you and your family, and do it all at the same time. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free, and you can call one and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our $100,000 class is also available on compact disc. Compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, and then click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the book Genetic Roulette, written by Jeffrey Smith. You can probably get a copy at Barnes & Noble or your local bookstore. It's brand new. It's put out in 2007, so it's a very current book. It's a follow-up of a book that he wrote earlier, which was called Seeds of Deception. Now, seeds are pretty important. Seeds have been around, you know, since the Garden of Eden, and mankind relies upon these seeds. There's a scripture in the Bible that deals with seeds, in case you hadn't known that. It's in Leviticus 19, verse 19, which prohibits this experimentation in seed. Let me read that to you. Leviticus 19, 19. Hybridizing your seed or genetically modifying the seed is statutorily prohibited in Leviticus 19, verse 19, where it says, "You shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle gender with a diverse kind, and you shall not sow your field with mingled seed, and neither shall a garment mingled of linen and woolen come upon you." Three prohibitions here. One of them is on mingled seed. The mingling of seed, in the biblical sense over here, is where we alter the genetic makeup or the inherent characteristics of seed. And we do that here in the United States. We're great at that. We had a guy by the name of Luther Burbank here. You know, he was a great plant biologist. And the hybridizing of seed is done for profit and gain by seed companies. It doesn't do anything for you. In fact, I showed you in the last program, there's a guy by the name of Adolf Steinbrom. And he did a study some years back in which he was an Iowa farmer. And he put the matter in perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients. So you take the nutrients of the product that you plant. In other words, you take your seed, your hybrid seed, you know, that comes from Monsanto, and I'll take my open pollinated seed and we'll plant it together. You plant yours and I'll plant mine. We'll just, together means at the same time. And then we'll grow our corn or we'll grow our tomatoes or whatever it is, and then we'll test those products for the nutrient content. And the open pollinated seed, that is the old line heritage seed, will contain more nutrients than the new, improved, better, scientifically developed hybridized seed. Here's that story. Steinbrom in Iowa put the matter in perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients usually added to commercial feeds, compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn. Now, they didn't just do it with two or three. They tested this with 4,000 samples of hybrid corn. Now, that's a lot of samples. This isn't some mere, you know, random test, you know. Well, look at there. This was a very controlled study, a sizable one, 4,000 samples of hybrid corn. Here's what they found. And they didn't do it in just one place. They did it in 10 Midwest states in the Corn Belt. I mean, they took samples from all over the Corn Belt, all over the Midwestern United States, 4,000 of these samples. And here's the results.
Steinbrom's open pollinated corn contains 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, and the same result has been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, boys and girls, the purpose for eating food is to get the nutrients out of it. You cannot get iron or copper or manganese or trace elements or protein out of foods that don't contain them. And that's just common sense. You don't have to be real smart to figure that out. Now, if your body needs these elements and then you can't get them in your food, well, then I guess you got to be taking one a day, multiple vitamins or something else. Now, many of these diseases are caused by nutritional deficiencies. But there's another cause to disease, and that's toxins. Toxins, poisons. You know, there's things you know that are in the foods that we eat that aren't good for us. You know, you got cholesterol. You know, that acts as a toxin because you get too much of the wrong kind over here. And it causes problems. You eat fat, and that fat then plugs up your arteries and gives you atherosclerosis, and then you have a heart attack or a stroke. It's a toxin. That's what that's working out to be. And so you say, well, gee, I didn't know that. Well, okay, you don't have to know things to have them affect you. Now, this guy, Jeffrey Smith, has spent a lot of time working on genetically modified foods. And these GM foods now are in your food supply, whether you like it or not. About one-third of all of the cropland in this country is now devoted to these GM crops, in violation of Leviticus 19:19. Now, you know, God doesn't go into a lot of detail and explain to you, like, you know, here's just one statute in Leviticus 19:19 says, you shall not sow your field with mingled seed. Very short and to the point. Here's Jeffrey Smith comes along with a 300-page book, well-documented, scientific studies, and says the same thing. God is a little, you know, more direct and to the point and says, don't do that. But doesn't explain why, or give you a lot of scientific gibberish to go along with it, and studies, you know, as to what the outcome is going to be. Just said, all right, I've already tested that. It doesn't work. Don't do it. But, you know, men have to go out and try things. We have to experiment. And I'm not opposed to the experimentation. We've talked about that a time or two here on the air. You know, there's two ways for us to learn. We can learn by revelation. You know, you shall not sow your seed with mingled, or sow your field with mingled seed. That's a revelation. We still don't know why. God never explained it. He just told us don't do it. And then there's experimentation. And we can do that. We can have Monsanto and big corporations go out here and experiment with that and give us a result. And now we're getting the results in the book, which is called Genetic Roulette. And the results are all bad. And with great detail, they go into, and here, let's take a look at protein. The form protein may be different than what is intended. Well, what happens to the protein in these plants if it's altered? How does that affect you? Now, there are four fundamental ways in which the structure of a protein can influence its function and impact your health. First is the amino acid sequence of the protein. Two, how is this protein folded? Three, how proteins interact and create aggregate shapes. And four, the content, shape, and location of other molecules, such as sugars, phosphates, or lipids, that become attached to the proteins. So this section shows how each of these structural aspects of proteins are altered in GM crops in unpredictable ways. So I mentioned to you last time, we're dealing with an experiment. That's the bottom line. We're experimenting, and you are the guinea pig. We don't know what the ultimate end of this is going to be yet, but there's going to be an ultimate end to it. There's going to be a conclusion. There's going to be some repercussions. There's going to be an outcome that we can all observe. Now, we had a product here years ago called thalidomide. It was a drug. And it was some kind of a calmer downer, I guess it was, you know, some kind of a sedative. And it works good. I mean, nobody's complaining about the drug. It's a good drug. Just works like a shot, you know, for the intended purpose. Calms you right down, makes you feel real good, you know, probably a little like a heroin. And so they started selling it. And it was a great drug, and everybody liked it. And the druggists were making money, and the doctors were making money. And so they started selling it to people. Well, you know, people come in all kinds of shapes and sizes, and some people are big, and some people are little, and some people are boys, and some people are girls. And when they were selling it to the girls, some of the girls were pregnant. And so some of the pregnant girls took it, and it looked real good, and it felt real good, and it tasted real good. And so they took it, and then everything's going along fine. And then their babies were born without arms or legs. And so, you know, right away, you've got a pregnant woman over here, and she has a baby, and so she has a baby with no arms or legs, or one or the other, or combination of the two or something. Anyway, it's a birth defect, and this kid's got six toes. This is a birth defect where this kid doesn't have any legs. This baby doesn't have any arms. It isn't just a birth defect where he's got club feet or something like that, or a hair lip, and that can be, or cleft palate, I guess they call it, that can be surgically repaired, or maybe even, you know, Siamese twins, we can separate them. No, in this case, these are genetic defects which are humongous in size and scope, and so they started researching this and looking into it, and so as they looked at it, they said the least common denominator here is that all these birth defects, all these women are taking this drug called thalidomide. Well, you know, you didn't have to be real smart to figure out that pregnant women that take this drug called thalidomide have deformed babies. And as they took a look at the numbers of them, and I don't know if it was 100% or 90% or whatever, but you know, it's a pretty sizable bunch, percentage-wise. And so they came to the conclusion, oh my God, we've got to take this off the market. This is really bad. Now, when you get something that's really bad like that, you know, they get right after it. But sometimes things aren't quite as bad. And so there was a drug came out, and I think it was called Tambacol or something like that. Tambracol or some. He's had one recently taken off the market here by Merck. And I've forgotten the name of it here. If I think of it, I'll tell you what it is. But anyway, they came to the conclusion this Tambacol over here, after some years out in the marketplace, had killed 50,000 people. 50,000 people died from this one drug, which is about the same number of people that died in the Vietnam War, where all you people got real excited and rioted in the streets and one thing and another. And again, I don't know why it is. If you got a war, like the war in Iraq, and you're killing three people a day, that gets people real excited, you know. But if you kill 100,000 people down at the doctor's office or at his clinic here with iatrogenic disease, nobody seems to get excited. So I've learned a long time ago, I'm not out here trying to get you to get on the bandwagon over here and get off of this or that, or get on to something else. I'm a reporter. I just report facts to people. But I can't help but observe, you know, what I'm seeing, and then report these observations to you. So when it comes to thalidomide, then you can see the results right there in front of you, and it's a horrific result. By God, people get excited about that. You know, an airplane crashes, and people can see bodies and body parts all over. Boy, they get excited. But doctors bury their mistakes. You know, so you don't see how many of those doctors' mistakes, you know, killed people. They bury those. And, well, the doctor did everything he could. Doctor did everything he could. Well, they're doing the same thing here with this GM. Now, when we get over here to proteins, we find that these proteins over here, here's a little comment here by J.M. Wall, food scientist, French National Institute of Agricultural Research. He said, slight structural changes may occur depending on the producing organism. These can affect the primary sequence of the protein due to the point mutations, or can be due to post translation modifications. For example, variations in the glycosylation or phosphorylation, I guess is the way that word is, levels. And such modifications may have an incidence on the immunoactivity of the protein. Boy, that's a mouthful. What that means is proteins expressed in a GM plant may be processed differently than in the donor organism, and those changes, which could include misfolding or molecular attachments, can be harmful in very unpredictable ways. And third, current studies do not adequately test for these changes. Now, I think a lot of times scientists, they use these big words, you know, and then we have to translate them out, and we translate them out. Oh my God, they're bad for us. Now, that's the bottom line. They're bad for us. And scientists don't communicate very well. And I'm not quite sure why they do that. They do it intentionally. I think that it's just vanity. I think they're just trying to show us how smart they are. In fact, these guys in many cases are so damn smart, they become stupid. And in the last program, I told you about this laser physicist over here, you know, real smart guy, real smart guy. His problem was economics. He couldn't add and subtract very well. He could come up with a laser that could kill a man at 100 yards, but he couldn't balance his checkbook. That seemed to be his big problem there. Well, let's take a look at proteins. Proteins are not wholly characterized just by amino acids. The sequences do not necessarily reveal their structure, function, biological activity, stability, and uniqueness. Characteristics of proteins can vary between species and even between different cells in the same species. The bacterial and viral genes put into these GM foods, however, cross entire kingdoms. It is unclear how these plants might alter the bacterial or viral proteins. According to Dr. David Schubert, a toxin that is harmless to humans when made in bacteria could be modified by plant cells in many ways, which become harmful. All right, now, that's a mouthful. You can take proteins or substances that are totally harmless in their natural form. Then you come over here and you genetically modify this plant. It produces the same stuff, and this stuff becomes harmful. And I reported that to you the last time. They're feeding this product to rats. In its natural form, it doesn't do anything to them. In fact, they fed it to them 700% more, seven times more of this natural product. Never harmed the rats at all. But the same product, when it was produced in the BT plant, caused all the damage to their internal organs. It's this gene splicing over here. It's this mingled seed that we see here in Leviticus 19:19 that's causing the problem. Now, for years and years, we've been using these hybridized seeds. I mean, hell, it's been around for as long as I've been here. And I know that people, you know, they'll go down, they'll buy this new improved variety. The package always says new and improved variety of these hybrid seeds. One time out of my greenhouse here, I had this great big a squash plant. I mean, it was humongous, beautiful plant. And it had flowers on it. And these flowers would get big and beautiful and long, and then pretty soon they would die, which is normal. And then we should expect to see some fruit growing on here. And I went out there and I looked at it, and there's no fruit. It was a hybrid plant. It was a seed that got out there in the greenhouse from some pumpkin or some squash that came from the store. And it grew. It grew a plant. And that's what hybrids do. They grow big, healthy, luscious-looking plants and no fruit. I guess that's why God told you not to mess with them over there, because they're useless to you. I mean, can you imagine not knowing, you look at a seed, you can't tell what that seed is, and so you go plant that seed. When you get all three, you got all these neat plants and no fruit. You'd starve to death. God's a pretty practical guy, He says this is nonsense. Don't waste your time on that. And so there's a profit, though, that can be made by the seed company. See, because the seed company can produce a seed that, while it won't reproduce, the first generation produces a plant, produces produce. And so you get the produce off this plant over here. God, it looks great. Oh, wow, look at the size of that pumpkin. Now, you take that pumpkin and you analyze it like Adolf Steinbaum did over here, and you find out that it's deficient in its nutrients. Then you eat that plant with these deficient nutrients in it, and you develop nutritional diseases. Nutritional deficiencies, they call those. And it may be something, like beriberi, or something like that, and they give it a name, and they copyright it, and then they come up with a drug for it. They put the missing nutrient in this drug, and they sell it to you for many, many dollars. You'd get the same stuff just by eating an ear of corn, but, the corn doesn't have it in it because it's hybridized. And so then we have a pharmaceutical industry over here. So we eat foodless food, then we go to the doctor. The doctor gets paid. He prescribes a drug. The pharmaceutical company puts this nutrient in this pill, and they give it to you. Maybe vitamin C to fight scurvy. So you come in, you got scurvy, and so they give you this prescription. You go down here, and they give you vitamin C. Now you can go down and buy vitamin C. You can get vitamin C out of your tomatoes. You can get vitamin C out of your food. But if we can sell it to you for $1 a pill or something like that, we make a lot more money off of it. God, Americans just love it. We just can't get enough. And we want more of it. Now, in the Bible, God tells you this is a waste of your time, tells you don't do that over there, but we've got to do it because it makes profit and gain. And the average Joe Sixpack American doesn't know that. Nobody's ever reported it to him. Didn't teach him that in school. They're not supposed to. They don't send you to school to educate you. They send you to school to indoctrinate you as a consumer so that you'll buy the products that are being advertised over the boob tube. And you do. And it makes a good business. And you got a job, and you're out here working, and whatever it is that you're producing over here for other people, and they buy that useless product. We have a lot of useless products over here. A lot of good products, a lot of fun products, but we have a lot of useless products. And then these GM foods over here is one of those useless products. Now, not only is it useless, but it's also harmful. Harmful. And that's the gist of Jeffrey Smith's book. It's bad enough that you're wasting your money on foodless foods, but it's even worse than that because these GM proteins can be harmful. Now, depending on where a protein is produced, molecular chains such as sugars, phosphate, sulfate, or lipids can become attached to the protein and then alter its function. Doug Gurium, a plant pathologist who formerly evaluated GM crops at the EPA, says such alterations may change the structure, allergenicities, and that's the allergic reaction you get, and other properties of a protein. Schubert adds, with our current state of knowledge, there's no way of predicting either the modifications or their biological effects. Well, here's a plant geneticist who says, we don't know what the hell we're doing. We're experimenting here, and we're selling this to the general public, and we're using them as guinea pigs, and we haven't got a clue as to what this outcome is going to be. Well, okay, if you want to be one of those guinea pigs, that's fine. I want you to do that. Don't use me as a guinea pig. I'm objecting to that. Now, several studies confirm that when sugar chains become attached to proteins, this process, known as glycosylation, can turn a harmless protein into a dangerous allergen. Now, although bacteria do not add sugar molecules to proteins, plants do. And it's possible that a bacterial protein expressed in a GM plant can be glycosylated. Peas were inserted with genes from kidney beans. The glycosylation pattern in the kidney bean protein, which was apparently harmless, underwent subtle, unpredicted changes when expressed in the pea plant. Researchers believe this surprising difference found between closely related species was responsible for the pea becoming a potential allergen. Now, if you've got allergies over here, there's a cause for those allergies. Now, some people die from the allergies. Some people are miserable from the allergies, and so, well, you can survive it, but their quality of life goes down pretty dramatically. Now, there's some people that are allergic to peanuts. For instance, you look on a package and it'll say, now this product was manufactured in a plant and on a machine that also handles peanuts and other nuts, and they'll give you this warning, and that's because some people are extremely allergic to peanuts or certain other nuts or certain other chemicals in it. And so because of that, it can be life-threatening. Now, we're creating plants here that cause these allergens. these allergic reactions. That's one of the side effects that we're beginning to see that's being reported in here in Genetic Roulette. Good title. And that's because the title of the book tells you we do not know where the little ball is going to fall. We know it's going to fall into one of these holes here someplace, but we don't know which one. It's just a gamble. It's just, you know, hit or miss. Maybe, maybe not. We can't tell. And we're going to experiment. We'll flip the ball around, turn the wheel, and let's see what happens. I'd like a little more predictability than that. And I'd like somebody to tell me, we've experimented with this. And in the last program, I reported to you that Dr. Pusdai tested this over here. When he came back with his report, the British government fired him. He'd been working here for 35 years, and they said, that's it for you, sucker. You didn't give us the report that we were looking for. So therefore, you're fired. Boys and girls, that's not science, that's propaganda, pure and simple. They're out here to sell us a product, and that's fine. I'm not opposed to people that are selling a product. I would expect, though, that if you're going to sell me a product, you're not going to sell me a product that's going to cause an allergy, cause me to die, cause me to have some kind of a deformity. Hey, we're at the halfway point. I've got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, remember, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors and publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. So the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information, remember the Law Hour and editorial review. Go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, this week's report is on Genetic Roulette. Jeffrey Smith is the author. And you can probably get a copy. In fact, I know you can get a copy from Brave New Bookstore. Brave New Bookstore is located at 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B, Austin, Texas, 78705, for those of you that write. Those of you that have telephones, you can call them and get a price and get a quote and how to get it shipped to you and what your address is. The number is 512-480-2503. That's area code 512-480-2503. Or you can go to their website. It's bravenewbookstore.com if you want to check them out. Bravenewbookstore.com if you want to order a copy of the book. I recommend it highly because it's the follow-up to Seeds of Deception, which he wrote several years ago. And remember, genetic mutations or these genetic modifications are new. I mean, we're only talking about a science that's only been around here for about, you know, 10, 15 years. And the potential for harm, the genie is out of the jar. It's kind of like nuclear energy, you know. Once the atom bomb went off, you know, well, okay, the genie's out of the jar for good or for worse. And that's where we're at now with the GMOs. The genie's out of the jar for better or for worse. Now, the best thing that we can do is to avoid them. Avoid them like AIDS, herpes, and VD. So in order to do that, you got to know something about them. What do they do? What are they doing in animal studies? And what are the studies that have been conducted? Should I be eating them at all? I think once you see the book, you'll arrive at a conclusion. And your conclusion may be, hey, that Gordon, you know, he's just whistling Dixie through a straw hat, and I think I'll eat three helpings a day. Well, if that's your conclusion, get after it. But my conclusion is that this stuff's a killer. And in fact, I told you in the last program that the Messiah himself said that we're going to reach a time, a period of time, at the end of the age in which it would be possible to eliminate or annihilate all flesh from off the planet. Now, I don't know if he was referring to all mankind, that is, kill all the humans, or all life from off the planet. Now, I'm not quite sure how to take that. It's over in Matthew 24, verse 22. And he was pretty serious about that. He repeated it in Mark 13, Luke 21. There's a couple more chapters over here that deal with this end time age in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Neither of those chapters have anything good to say about what's coming down on us. And I suspect that this GMO is just one more insult that we are heaping upon ourselves. Now, you might sit there and say, well, you know, it's not me. I'm not doing this. I'm not making these GMOs. Well, you're contributing to it because you eat them. You're contributing to it because you voted in George Bush and the guys that are promoting it through the FDA. So we all have our little part to play in the overall scenario. Jeffrey Smith comes along and he makes a report and he says, listen to this. Several studies confirm that when sugar chains become attached to proteins, this process known as glycosylation can turn a harmless protein into a dangerous allergen. Okay, so there's the report. And that's what's going on. So what are we going to do about it? Now, I reported to you that there's four major crops here in the United States that have this in it. That's cotton. Now, you don't eat cotton, but you wear it. Don't have a word on what happens when you wear GM cotton. Maybe it doesn't have any effect at all. But the cottonseed is oftentimes used for oil. And so you'll pick up a package and it'll say, you know, we use cottonseed oil. Well, 80% of the cotton produced in the United States is GM. So therefore, you can just about bet that 80% of the cottonseed oil that's produced here in the United States is GM. Now, there's a big difference between wearing this as a shirt and eating this in your fruit pie. So if you're eating this cottonseed oil, this could have some pretty dramatic effects on you. I'm not suggesting that it'll turn out like thalidomide, and you'll see this birth defect immediately. It may kill you over a long period of time. You may come down with an allergy. Now, I've reported on aspartame a time or two. This aspartame has 92 symptoms. Many of these symptoms mimic other symptoms of other diseases. Oftentimes, doctors will misdiagnose aspartame disease and say you've got Parkinson's disease. You've got the same problem here with these GM foods. You go to your doctor, you've got this allergy. He can't figure out what this allergy is. What it is, it's the cottonseed oil that you're eating in your fruit pie that you got down here at the get-and-go store as you were on your way to work. Then you can't quite figure out what's going on here. And I'll start thinking about it. And I told you about the peas that were inserted with these genes from the kidney beans over here. Now, a protein shape also determines its effect, according to cellular biologist Barry Commoner. The newly made protein, a strung-out ribbon of a molecule, must be folded up into a precisely organized structure. So he points out that according to the old theory of genetics, the protein always folded itself up in the right way once its amino acid sequence had been determined. Well, in the 1980s, it was discovered that some proteins are on their own, and they're likely to become misfolded, and therefore remain biochemically inactive, unless they come in contact with a special type of chaperone protein that properly folds them. Well, for millions and millions of years, the chaperone folders have evolved along with the proteins that they fold. When a foreign bacterial protein comes in, or when a foreign bacterial protein comes in contact with a plant's chaperone folders, it is not clear what the results will be. If the protein becomes folded differently, it might create problems, according to the Center for Integrated Research on Biosafety. Proteins derived from natural sources, generally regarded as safe, can be toxic to cells if allowed to refold under different conditions. Okay, now they're toxic to cells. Toxins are poisons. So these GM proteins become toxic because of the way they're folded. Now, you know, we can sit here and say, well, what difference does it make how it's folded, left or right, up and down? Over and under? I don't know. I haven't got a clue. Barry Commoner says it's got an important result. He says over millions and millions of years. I think that a few thousand years ago, a guy came down here and designed this. Now, you know, when we go in and buy a new car, we get an operator's manual with the car. And the operator's manual says, the owner's manual, it says, put this kind of fuel into this car. Now, the Ford people, you know, they try different kinds of fuel. And as they're trying these different kinds of fuel, you know, an engine burns up or it blows up or an engine doesn't last as long. And so they come to a conclusion. They say, well, this is the kind of fuel that works best in this kind of an engine. You know, we have diesel engines and we have gasoline engines and then we have jet engines that burn kerosene and so on. All right. Now, when you introduce jet fuel into your diesel truck, I don't know if it'll run or not. Maybe it will. But it probably isn't going to run quite as well as it will if you're using number 2 diesel. Now, I did learn this, that you can burn number 1 stove oil, you know, the stuff you burn in your stove, you can burn that in your diesel engine, seemingly with no effect, but I don't know if the Cummings people would recommend that. But typically, they'll test these fuels or they'll test these oils, they'll test this car, and then they'll give you certain recommendations. Sometimes they actually give you a warning. You know, there was a type of transmission fluid that said, do not use this transmission fluid in a Ford transmission. I do remember that years ago. Evidently, there was some kind of a chemical compound or additive in this particular kind of oil that it interacted with the gaskets in the Ford transmission, and it would melt them out, you know, kind of like putting gasoline in a styrofoam cup. I don't know if you've ever tested that before, but you know, if you want to put a little, you want to carry a little gasoline, you know, and pour it into the carburetor of your pickup, you know, to get it started. So you run out of gas, and so you take a little gas and you pour it in a cup so you can pour it into the carburetor. Well, pour a little gasoline into a styrofoam cup sometime and see what happens. And the styrofoam cup just disintegrates right in front of your eyeballs. It just melts. So, you know, when a scientist comes out here and he tests for GM foods, or he takes us into the laboratory like we saw the last time, and they get a certain result in a laboratory animal over here, you know, it would be in our best interest if we could get that reported to us and get that reported on the label. Now, fortunately, here in the United States, we still have labeling. And in a lot of cases, you know, they have to tell you that this is cottonseed oil. In fact, I think in just about every case. So when I pick up a product and it says cottonseed oil in there, you know, I can drop it like a hot potato and say, well, I'm not going to eat that, because I know that 80% of the cotton in this country is produced with GM seeds, so therefore I'm going to avoid that. Now, the four crops are these. It's cotton, soybeans, corn, and canola. So you got those four crops. Now, they take up about a third of our cropland. Those are big, significant crops. And the products that come out of corn are used in a lot of other products. The products that come out of soybeans are used in many, many products. Same thing with this cottonseed oil. You can find cottonseed oil in just about any bakery product. So you ought to read the label and find out what's on there. Because like that certain automatic transmission fluid, it'll just melt the gaskets right out of your Ford transmission, and all of a sudden you'll have oil leaking out through all the vital parts of your transmission, and you're going to be very sad by then. But my point is that the normal person, you know, when he sees the directions that come from a Ford owner's manual, follows those directions very, very scrupulously. We look in the Bible, which is the owner's manual for human beings, and we ignore it. It doesn't make good sense to me, but then I'm just a reporter. Well, let's take a little bit more of this. Sometimes this refolding can result in a group of proteins aggregating into shapes with harmful consequences. INBI points out that certain aggregations of proteins that have sustained mutations or have been misfolded, it's called amyloid fibrils, are involved in a variety of medical conditions such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases. All right, now I'm going to underline them. You know, we got a hell of a problem here with this Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease. Good underlining right there. Now, Smith isn't claiming that GM food caused and creates Alzheimer's disease. But they're finding out, you know, as they research, you know, one scientist, he finds out something, he writes that down. Another scientist comes along, he finds something, he writes that down. Third scientist comes along, he finds out something, he writes that down. Pretty soon, we get a body of knowledge going over here. And pretty soon, some guy comes along, and he starts putting these little pieces together. You know, Joe found out this, and Sam found out something else, and Tom over here, he found out a little bit more. And along comes old Bill over here, he puts what Tom, Joe, and Bill, or Sam found, and he puts that all together. He says, oh my God, look at this. That's where thalidomide is, you know, that's what we do when we are looking for, well, what's causing these birth defects over here? Well, lady, what drugs are you taking? Lady, what are you eating? Lady, where have you been? Have you been exposed to some toxic chemical? You know, when the first thalidomide baby came up, you know, it was, oh my God, what causes this? We haven't got a clue. By the time you get 10 or 15 of them, you know, then you start asking, well, are you on some drug? Well, yeah, I'm taking this. Well, I'm taking that. Well, yeah, I'm eating aspirin. And then they find that there's a least common denominator. Well, I'm taking thalidomide. Well, I'm taking thalidomide. Well, I'm taking thalidomide. Well, I'm taking thalidomide. Well, pretty soon, some guy puts this piece of information into the equation. He says, oh my God, the least common denominator here is they're all taking thalidomide. And so then somebody says, could it be? Here comes the new theory now. Could it be that thalidomide is causing these birth defects? Well, it doesn't cause it in men. Well, it doesn't cause it in rats. Well, it doesn't cause it in monkeys. Causes it in people. Now, that's another thing they found out here with these GM foods. They were feeding this GM stuff to rats, and the rats didn't have any ill effects at all. They fed the stuff to monkeys, and they started killing the monkeys. And they came to find out that the substance that was in the GM food, when they fed it to the rats have a high tolerance for this particular kind of a chemical, and the rat, he just blows it off. It's no big deal. The monkeys, when they ingested this particular chemical over here, God just raised hell with them. And so they got to looking at that, and they said, well, now we found out that rats have a higher tolerance for this than do the monkeys. So therefore, when we give this to human beings, we could probably figure out that, well, maybe human beings can't tolerate this any better than the monkeys can. So that's another little factor that you got to take into consideration. All right, so now they've been working on this over here. While GM foods didn't cause Parkinson's disease, it was here before the GM foods, they find that it aggravates the problem. aggravates the problem. The chemicals that are in these GM foods over here aggravate the problem with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. And the studies indicate that any protein can adopt this amyloid configuration upon exposure to appropriate environmental conditions. And so these GM foods now are developing this amyloid, or amyloid configuration. So whatever the amyloid configuration that causes Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's, or if it doesn't cause it, we find that it's present. You know, maybe the thalidomide didn't cause the birth defect, but it's present in all of these cases over here. So wouldn't that then tell us that we ought to look into that a little more seriously? And this is why experimentation is pretty important. Now, I know people get real excited and they say, well, we don't want to wait for 20 or 30 years before we find out whether this is safe or not. We want to get right after it right now. And so that's where industry is. You know, they're sitting there saying, well, we don't want to have to wait here for 20 or 30 years to cash in on this. We want to sell this in the marketplace right now. So let's just go do that without experimenting for 20 or 30 years and finding out what the ultimate long-term effect is going to be. And so we subject the whole population to it. Now, we've been doing this with fluoride for a long time, and now we have enough body of knowledge. We can tell you very authoritatively now that fluoride kills people. And when you put fluoride in your drinking water, it causes physiological changes in human beings, and it has a very detrimental effect. And we can now do that with aspartame. We can say, my God, here's the 92 symptoms that you develop from aspartame. And here's the kicker. It doesn't do it in every person. Some people can eat that aspartame, and God, it just tastes real good, and we don't have a problem in the world. And then other people eat it, and God, they get a reaction right away. And over a long period of time, the people get some pretty severe reactions and die from it. And so the overall conclusion is it's really bad for you, but you can't get the government to take it off of the market or to order it taken off of the market. But, you know, you and I don't have to buy it. And so you can learn what this aspartame name is. It's got about 10 or 12 names. And when you see those names on a package, you can say, well, I'm not buying these cookies because it's got this aspartame in it. And that's something that you can do. You can solve that problem for yourself. Now, Ralph Nader, he's the guy. He wants to go out here and get the FDA and the government and the Congress all lined up over here to protect all of you people from Monsanto. And George Gordon comes along over here and says, I'm not trying to put Monsanto out of business. I'm just here to tell you that GM seed produced by Monsanto causes problems that could kill you. And as a result of that, you should avoid that. And here's the way you avoid that. That's what I do. I get the best of both worlds. Monsanto can make their seeds, and the people that want to buy them, buy them. People want to eat them, eat them. And then those of us that don't want to buy them, don't. And those of us that don't want to eat them, don't. And everybody's happy. Monsanto's happy. The people that eat Monsanto seeds are happy. The people that avoid Monsanto seeds are happy. I say that's the best of both worlds. Ralph Nader, he gets Monsanto real upset and excited. Gets the FDA upset and excited. Gets people all upset and excited. Stirs up a lot of hate and discontent, trying to save everybody from themselves. Could it ever occur to us that a lot of people don't want to be saved? It's a wild new concept, especially for you religious folk out there. You know, you're out here saying, well, of course, everybody. The presumption is because I want to be saved, everybody wants to be saved. So I've got to knock on your door and be an obnoxious pest and ask you if you know Jesus. And so that's exactly right. Did it ever occur to you religious guys that there's some of us out here that don't give a rat's, you know what? We don't want to be saved. Leave us alone. Well, it occurs to me that there's probably a lot of people out there that really don't care much about GM one way or the other and just happy as a clam at high tide eating genetically modified foods. Couldn't care less. Leave me alone. And then so I take that into consideration and say, well, why would I want to take that away from the good folks out there that want it? It's kind of like smoking, you know. For all you smokers out there, you know, I smoke for years and years. And so I'm an ex-smoker. But I'm an ex-smoker that isn't trying to evangelize all of you smokers out there. I'm not trying to get you people to quit smoking. Hell, I think if God made anything better than tobacco, he kept it for himself. I thought that smoking was pretty darn good. I enjoyed every puff. I never had a problem with a Roy Tan cigar. I really liked them. But I smoked for many years, and I read some literature, and, you know, and I came to a conclusion, and I said, you know, I think this stuff's going to kill me. And I think this great pleasurable habit I've got over here smoking is killing me little by little. And the tobacco companies are making a lot of money off of my demise. And I don't think that I ought to die for the profit margin of Liggett and Myers. So I said, the hell with this, and I quit. But I've never told anybody else that they ought to quit smoking. Hell, I don't know if you ought to quit smoking or not. I know it. It feels real good. I smoked for years. I loved it. I thought it was great. And I'd say the same thing about a heroin addict. You know, I wouldn't tell some guy's taking heroin, he shouldn't take it. The government does. They get real excited. They come in and tell everybody, well, we're going to outlaw that and put you in prison. We catch you taking these drugs over here. And I never could quite figure that out. You know, Americans are drug addicts. Americans consume more drugs than anybody else in the world. But we're really down on crack and cocaine and heroin, but we don't have a problem with Osco Betry and Rexall and the doctor and Merck and Pfizer. Why we legalize these drugs and we take them by the average person 65 years and older is on six drugs. Six, average. I'm over 65 and I'm not on any drugs. I avoid them like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Some of you people must be taking 7, 8, or 9, or 10 drugs or something, because I know there's a few of us out here that must not be taking any. So again, you know, if you think I'm an evangelist over here trying to get you to change something over here, no, not at all. What I'm trying to do is to alert you to the fact that you got a bad problem over here. You know, I've alerted people and I've said, hey, listen, you got a bad problem with this cancer thing over here. And the FDA and the government, they can't help you. Well, not with cancer. If you think the government's going to solve the cancer problem, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy again. The government can't solve the cancer problem. Hell, they've been spending billions of dollars for 30, 40 years, and it's getting worse. I don't know if all the money and research that's going into cancer is causing cancer. I wouldn't go that far, but it sure as hell ain't solving the problem. Because in 1900, only one person in 33 was going to get cancer in their lifetime. Today, it's one in two. We're spending more money than we can afford on cancer research, and they promise us by the year 2020, every single person in the United States of America is going to get cancer statistically one time in his lifetime. I don't think we need to spend any more money on cancer research than bought us anything so far. You know, if I was buying a product over here, and it was supposed to cure dandruff, and I kept using the product over here, my dandruff just gets worse and worse, and my hair falls out. You know, at some point in time, I'd quit taking that remedy. Number one, ain't curing the dandruff, and number two, my hair's falling out. Now, I couldn't say that this product's causing my hair to fall out, but it sure as hell ain't keeping it in. You know, you don't have to be real smart. You know, pretty soon you can start putting two and two together yourself. Hell, even us truck drivers can do that. I don't need a scientific study over here to figure that out. Now, let me tell you this guy's name again. It's Genetic Roulette. And this is the name of the book, G-E-N-E-T-I-C. R-O-U-L-E-T-T-E. Genetic Roulette. Jeffrey M. Smith is the guy. You can get it at any bookstore, I'm sure. And if you can't find a bookstore that's got it, if you have a problem with it, don't you forget. BraveNewBookstore.com. They have it. In fact, they sent it to me and said, review this book, would you? We think people need to know about this. And I agree with them. I think that people need to know about it. That's why we're reviewing it, and that's why we're reporting on it. All right. Now, I'm going to have to give you a final reminder. Hell, we're running out of time again. You get cranked up and start to have fun, and then all of a sudden you leave. So we'll take this up next time here on The Law Hour, an editorial review. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information about that, go to our homeschooling page on our website, and they'll tell you about it. If you don't have a computer and you don't go to the website, then just call us direct at 417-273-4967, and we'll tell you more about it. And while you're at it, ask for our free introductory CD package, free of charge. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.